We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the Pusher Robot.
And I'm the Shover Robot.
And we are here to protect you from the terrible secret of space. Terrible secrets of space. One day we'll actually get that in sync, I think.
Well, we can't be that far apart now. I mean, we're a lot closer, physically speaking.
Oh, very true. Yeah, you moved recently. That's why we haven't had an episode up for about a month.
Yeah, it's been a brief hiatus as I've moved my way up now to Alaska. Much nicer and, dare I say, more inhabitable than the desert that I just came from.
Yeah, and slightly less undisclosed. Yeah,
slightly
location.
Less undisclosed. Hi, actually, I told you what state I'm in. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, you can actually do that now.
I can. Oh, that's wonderful.
All right, well, it's good to have you back. You've joined us for an interesting topic, as if we would be doing the topic without you. But anyway, this week we're talking about black holes, because they are the holiest of holies.
The holiest of holies. Oh, my goodness.
I knew I had to move that in there somewhere.
It's a terrible joke, but I like it.
It is. Okay, so black holes are a favorite of science fiction and regular science alike, and because there has been some buzz about it in the news this last week with Professor Hawking coming out with some new information on data preservation through destruction by black hole, we'll probably touch on that briefly here later, figured it would be a good topic for us to run through. So before we get started here, we want to talk about, you know, what black holes are. And black holes, in most cases, start with stars. So, it's good. We like stars.
What kind of stars are we talking about here?
Big stars.
Big ones? Small ones? What about our sun? Could our sun turn into a black hole?
It probably couldn't. So, we'll talk about stars first. And stars are our big friends of fusion explosions, because we wouldn't have our friends any other way.
Yeah, basically, I talked to one of my physicist buddies one time. Actually, it was Professor Bailey back at school. And I asked him, I was like, hey, so this star thing, I mean, basically you're telling me anytime we have enough mass, it just all of a sudden starts igniting. He's like, yes, anytime you have enough mass, you can, and you know, of anything, eventually you could, it would turn into a star.
And that, I'm pretty sure that's true, although not anything. So stars generally form out of large groupings of hydrogen, predominantly amongst other materials, because hydrogen is very abundant in our universe, and because it is so easy to fuse together, at least for large masses, because the fusion is undertaken by gravity, which is why it's so hard for us to develop a fusion engine here on Earth, because we don't have the means by which we can generate that kind of attractive force.
Mm-hmm.
So these big chunks of floating hydrogen in the universe get together, and gravity eventually starts attracting them together once they reach a certain concentration in a large enough area, and that begins the fusion process. So the fusion is an exothermic reaction, which is why it would make an awesome energy source for humanity, but that causes a radiation pressure to build up, radiating from the inside of the star outwards, and that pressure keeps it from completely collapsing due to gravity. So you get this effect much like a balloon, where the pressure inside of a balloon is counteracting the pressure of the rubber trying to contract the balloon back down to a smaller size. And the star goes on like this for a while as hydrogen fuses into helium, which then alpha particles, because electrons get stripped away in the presence of fusion, but different kind of thing. And that eventually gets us with lesser or smaller elements fusing into larger elements until we get to about hydrogen, or not hydrogen, iron. Until we get back to hydrogen.
Is it to hydrogen?
Yep. No, until we get to iron. And at iron, it's no longer exothermic to try to fuse it with other iron. And the star starts to lose its radiation and begins to collapse, because in the case of a balloon example, it's like we are letting air out of the balloon, so the rubber is starting to win, so the star starts to collapse. And that's when things get explodey.
So wait, it collapses and then gets explodey? Also, does it make that wonderful that flatulent sound like balloons do? Because that would just be pretty cosmically epic.
And it just starts like flying around the solar system, making the
That would be
farting
dangerous.
noise.
Oh my gosh, terrifying. Can you imagine that? You know, m millions of miles of just, oh my gosh, the sun just running around, knocking into things like billiards.
Yeah, just ding, do, do, ding. I think we've seen
Chaos
several
theory right
cartoons
there.
like that, actually. So the star collapses, and as it collapses, it undergoes this massive heating up because of this gravitational energy, which is what started the fusion process in the first place. And that causes any of the fissile material that's still left, or fissile material that's still left, I guess,
Material.
it causes it to rapidly combust, basically, and the star explodes in what we call a supernova. And if the star, depending on how much material is left after the supernova, the star can enter several different states. If the star has a lot of material but is less than a certain limit, which we'll get to in a second, it becomes something like a pulsar or a neutron star, which is a very, very dense star that, or after star, I guess, that basically just emits a lot of radiation. Pulsars emit radiation in the form of radio bands spinning with a certain frequency, which is very useful for navigation in space because pulsars are fairly unique and good waypoints, and you can see them from a long ways away.
Absolutely, and a good name for like a an electronic band maybe.
Yeah, seriously, I'd be surprised if there isn't already one.
So neutron stars though, I heard I think once that if you had like a teaspoon of neutron star material, it would weigh as much as the planet Earth.
Something like that. I'm sure it depends on the neutron star and might vary from star to star, but in essence, neutron stars are seriously that dense where they have just. To put it in perspective, I believe I remember an article from a few years ago where they dissected the mass spectrometer data from a neutron star or a pulsar from several light years away and found that its inside was composed almost entirely of diamond and. You know, it's just a giant diamond. They called it Lucy, is what I'm trying to get at. So,
I see what you did there, Beatles.
yeah, so
Well
there we
done.
go.
Well
So,
done.
if the star is small like our sun, it's destined to collapse and become something like a neutron star or a pulsar or perhaps a smaller dwarf star. As the stars get bigger and bigger, like we're talking gas giant, or not gas giant, but red giant size, I'm just tripping all over my words tonight, but that's okay. We'll get through this together.
We will.
So once it gets larger, it passes a limit called, and I'm sorry to somebody who's very definitely dead now if I mispronounce their last name, but Chandrasekhar limit. Chandrasekhar was a physics graduate student who, well, at the time he was a graduate student, I'm sure he didn't stay a grad student forever. In 1931, he calculated on during a voyage from or across the Atlantic. When he was going to study with a physicist, I believe here in the States, the size limit at which a star becomes so massive that when it collapses, it has too much mass to in too tight an area to stay a normal kind of afterstar, like a neutron star. And that's where we get black holes, is because you have so much mass in such a small area that we start getting some weirdities in the realm of physics, and that's what we're here to do.
Weirdities, you don't say.
Weirdities. So, obviously, this doesn't happen all the time. In most cases, a larger star, like a red giant, will collapse, and when the supernova happens, it blows off enough of its material in the supernova to prevent forming a black hole. But in some cases, it totally retains enough material to do so. So, we have known about black holes for a long time now. It was predicted by the general theory of relativity that something like this would have to exist to explain certain astrological phenomena and astronomical phenomena. We're not talking, you know,
Astrological phenomena.
astrological phenomena. Talking about Cassiopeia and some, you know, Scorpios,
Gemini.
Gemini.
How's the horoscope always wrong? And darn those black holes.
Yeah, it's
Oh.
black holes' fault. They caused all the problems. So, we've known about black holes since the late 19th century as a concept of, hey, there's something weird going on with some of these star patterns, like how the stars are moving in the night sky. that can only be explained by that there's something out there that we can't see that is exerting significant gravitational forces on these large bodies. So it's got to be something really massive and not a star, per se, or else we'd see it. So the term black hole was coined by John Wheeler in 1967 or 68, depending on the source that I've been looking up. And that kind of threw me for a loop, because I was pretty sure that they had used the term black hole in the original series of Star Trek, but if he coined it in 1967 or 68, then they totally couldn't have, and it was blowing my mind a little bit. So, dang it.
Captain's log.
Yeah, it's like, they gotta fall into a black hole at some point. They did it in every other series. Anyway, so black holes are supermassive, very tiny chunks of matter, kind of like the genie in Aladdin. And black hole is kind of a it's kind of a misnomer, because in reality, like, you look at it on a, I don't know, like a movie or a television show or something, and it's always like this big black orb that's sucking in everything around it. But in reality, you really can't see a black hole. And that's because of another property of the general theory of relativity, which is that light bends around gravitational fields. So, in essence, a black hole would be, in most cases, naturally cloaked, because you could see the stars that were behind it and other points of luminescent radiation, you know, light and X-rays and radio that were behind it that didn't get sucked into it, of course, because that electromagnetic radiation would bend around the event horizon of a black hole. So it would kind of just be sneaky.
Sneaky around the black hole, which is, you know, in itself is sneaky because it's naturally cloaked due to its the fact that it's bending photons around it or getting them sucked in through the event horizon.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
And we can't see what's inside a black hole because of that same gravitational bending and because of the gravitational forces involved. Light, although that's traveling at a fixed speed, is being diverted so rapidly within what we call the event horizon. Basically, the event horizon is once you're within there, light can't escape, and because nothing in the universe that we know of can travel faster than light, therefore nothing can escape either. So once you're within the event horizon, you are totally hosed, because there's no way that you can move fast enough with what we understand with physics these days that you could escape from that position.
Wait a second. Of course, you're telling me these things, but I'm pretty sure I saw the movie Interstellar, and Matthew McConaughey definitely went into the event horizon, and it totally looked like the inside of a kaleidoscope.
Well, you know, Matthew McConaughey is an exception to physics in more ways than one, but that's probably a different topic altogether.
Indubitably.
So that is, we'll talk about a few of those misconceptions after we get through the facts of black holes. Facts of Black Holes. That sounds like a band name.
Facts of Black Holes.
A weird band, but...
Put a copyright on that.
Probably.
Be rich.
Just cash it in. We'll just quit this. Start a band. Anyway, so because light is bending through the event horizon and can't escape it, we can't actually see what's going on inside of a black hole, because all of our means by which we detect... So we'll break this down physics-wise. You can see the computer screen in front of you as you're listening to this podcast, assuming you're doing it on a computer, because light is being bounced off of pigments in your monitor or being passed through pigments in your monitor, depending on how old your display is, whether you're using cathode ray or LED or CRT or whatever. And that is entering your eyes. So you are perceiving light in your environment. But because light can't escape the inside of a black hole, there's nothing for us to perceive. And indeed, all of our instruments that we use measure particle densities or electromagnetic radiation in some form, so we literally can't see what's inside of a black hole. And another interesting fact is what happens to our perception of time as we get closer to gravitational bodies. So the general theory of relativity predicts, and has actually experimentally shown, that if you put a stopwatch at sea level, and you took another stopwatch which was identical in every way and measured time exactly in sync with the first stopwatch and put it up at, say, you know, 10,000 or 20,000 feet above sea level, and you left them there for an extended period of time, you would start to notice that the one at sea level is moving slower than the one at 10,000 or 20,000 feet.
Absolutely. You know, I've done some research on that, too. I thought it was pretty fascinating in high school. And it turns out, for all you frequent flyers, that a trip from New York to London over the Atlantic Ocean, if you took off and say you had a twin, you know, your very same age that you left behind in New York, landed in London, during the course of that flight, because you're flying that's so much higher than, you know, your twin back at sea level, you are now 3/1,000,000,000 of a second younger than your twin.
Yeah, so obviously at Earth levels of gravitational force, it's not all that significant. So it affects it, and indeed you can see this.
Time travel.
Yes, true. Or rather, time displacement.
Indeed.
Some might say. But obviously this is of practical use in the GPS tracking industry, because GPS satellites have to take into account general relativity as they make their precise timing measurements versus your receiver on the ground. And if they didn't do that, then you'd be off by hundreds of feet, at least, depending on where the satellites were in relation to you. So it's a very important part of physics and of how we perceive time. So how this relates back to a black hole is, because you are standing, if you were standing in a black hole on the what we would call the singularity, and we don't know if it has like a solid surface or what, but say you're inside the event horizon, you are technically in what is closing in on an infinite gravitational pull, or at least a pull that is strong enough to affect light, which is supermassive in any scale. So that would mean that your time in relation to the time of the rest of the universe would start stretching to almost infinitely slow. Of course, you wouldn't have a lot of time to think about that, as you were being completely torn into, you know, subatomic spaghetti by the gravitational forces that you were experiencing. But that's probably best left to not experimenting with anyway.
Subatomic spaghetti is another good band name. Just gonna throw that out there, that we're having some like gold right now with their creativity.
Seriously, we're gonna have to capitalize on this before this podcast goes live, otherwise everybody will just be all over it.
The next new band, Subatomic Spaghetti, coming to a bar near you.
Bar.
I don't know.
A physics bar. Wherever Feynman used to play, that probably...
Oh my gosh, that'd be perfect.
Probably be a good thing.
Brazil or something in South America.
Exactly.
He's big into samba.
So, what keeps black holes from violating certain things? Like, obviously you'd think that the second law, or that several of the laws, actually, now that I think about it, of thermodynamics would be violated, because black holes, in common knowledge, represent the complete destruction of everything. Stuff gets sucked into them, and it don't come back out, at least not that we're aware of. So that would tend to violate the law of energy and matter being created or destroyed completely. I believe that's the first law of thermodynamics. I was kind of bad at thermo back in college, to be honest. But there are several ways, actually, that black holes will deal with this scenario, one of which is that black holes have been shown to grow appreciably as they absorb more matter. So if they are in the constant presence, say that a star is revolving around them and they're pulling some of the star's material off and sucking it into the black hole will start to get larger and larger until it eventually sucks up the whole star. And of course, the star will start doing gravity braking as it continues to orbit such a frickin' massive drain and get sucked in anyway, but, you know, such as it is.
Such as it is, indeed. And, you know, I just remembered from reading a book. Sorry, this is kind of somewhat of a tangent.
Oh, go for it.
The Future Magic book that I think I talked about in one of the earlier podcasts by Robert Forward. He talked about standing on a sphere of infinite density, which would be, say, if the singularity had a solid surface, you know, before you turn into a subatomic spaghetti, patent pending. What would it look like? And because of the way light works, say that you had light in a singularity, in this standing on the surface of a sphere of infinite density, or not density, mass, you would look up and you would see the opposite side of the sphere. So it would look, if you look in all directions, and it would appear to you that you were on the inside of a sphere instead of on the outside because of the way the light would bend. And there would be no way to escape this sphere because of the energy it would take you to go up higher in an energy level. So the thrust or delta V would be more than you could expend. So it's impossible to escape from something like that, according to physics in general, but on a thermodynamic standpoint as well, just from an energy standpoint. But it's just cool to think about, you know, hey, if you were on top of the sphere of infinite mass, it would look like you were on the inside of the sphere just because of the way light was bending.
And then you would promptly die.
Yeah.
So the other ways that black holes emit radiation of some sort, which is called Hawking radiation, because Professor Hawking is kind of a badass, just throwing that out there. But Hawking radiation is emitted in the form of, the area around a black hole is really turbulent. That probably should go without saying, because, you know, gravity and forces beyond comprehension.
The seatbelt light is always on flying near black holes.
Exactly. That should be the first song for Subatomic Spaghetti, actually. So, because of these intense forces, you get the creation of particle-antiparticle pairs, which get torn asunder from each other due to these intense stresses being put on them. And in most cases, these particle-antiparticles will pop apart and then pop back together and annihilate each other in little bursts of energy, which is fine. That's just kind of the universe working. But in some cases, these particle-antiparticle pairs will pop apart and one of them will get sucked in to the black hole, and the other one will have popped apart in such a way where it can, outside of the event horizon, obviously, where it can kind of flow free. And black holes will emit, using these forces, they'll emit this low-level radiation over time, and over time, black holes will slowly evaporate in this method. And so if your black hole is not getting enough input matter, it'll just kind of peter out and die after probably several million years, depending on the size of the black hole. It's a very slow process. There's a reason why we don't really use this radiation to find black holes, because it's so low level that it is masked by the normal background radio noise or microwave radiation present in the universe that's still left over from perhaps the universe forming, among other factors.
Interesting, but you're saying that it evaporates because you have an antiparticle and its partner, and one gets sucked in, the other one does not?
Something like that.
That's really fascinating, because on a very similar way, that's how vacuum energy drives, like the Casimir drive, are theorized to work. Interesting.
Yeah, I'll just stick a black hole in the back of them, call it good.
There you go, black hole engines.
I'm sure you can't go wrong. That's what the Romulans use.
So, dang it.
Dang, Romulans. They already copyrighted
it. Curse you, Gene Roddenberry, you already knew what we were going to do.
So speaking of which, I'd like to talk about a couple of myths surrounding black holes. We already talked about one, and that's that you can see a black hole when you get close to it, and it looks like a giant, big, black hole in space, which it very likely would not. You probably wouldn't even be able to tell you were on top of a black hole until you were already subatomic spaghetti.
Patent pending.
So, or until you started feeling the intense gravitational shifts that would accompany getting close to a body of such density where your feet would be, assuming that you were going into it feet first, your feet would be under the effects of so much intense gravitational pull versus your head, and that's where the subatomic spaghetti comes from. But black holes are often predicted in sci-fi as being energy sources, which, granted, they do give off radiation, but I honestly don't think there's any practical idea of how you would gather radiation in usable forms or some kind of strong energy source from a black hole, since they're pretty good at consuming things but kind of lousy at giving it back. So they'd be a great garbage disposal.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. Another thing is that you can use them to travel through time, and although it has been shown in mathematical models that black holes are a strong proponent of creating wormholes, shortcuts between two points in our three-dimensional universe, there probably wouldn't be any way to make use of that in a survivable sense.
Why not?
Well, subatomic spaghetti.
Oh, yeah.
For one.
Good point.
So, I mean, you could probably, if it happened, you'd pop out the other end. You'd just be all of your component atoms and none of the bonding between them. So, there you go.
Sounds like teleportation.
Yeah, basically.
Well, there's the current theories for it.
Yeah. Oh, the reason that we're even talking about this is due to Professor Hawking's latest findings that he presented just this last week that were discussing the data retention, because there is a meta concept about all matter in the universe that it has some kind of data associated with it. And, you know, it's not like a physical thing. It's more of a concept that there is a certain reason why certain states of matter are in certain forms, and there's a semi-law that I'm aware of that data can't be lost. It can be converted, but it can't be lost per se.
Right.
So there was a big problem regarding black holes that when something went into it, the data would be irretrievable about that matter or energy that was going into it. But Professor Hawking was putting forth his new research into that the data is imprinted on the event horizon once it enters the black hole. It's jumbled beyond recognition, but it's still there. So that is closing a gap in the black hole theory of how do these things operate exactly, despite the fact that we've never actually observed one empirically. So, interesting stuff. I honestly can't understand a good 90% of the technical details, so we're going to have to go with my low-level explanation for that.
One of these days we can afford, you know, guests and, like, physicists and stuff coming to explain these things to us.
Yes, explain them to us, layman. Us service robots just out there trying to protect people.
And the terrible secret of space. Seriously. Which black holes, certainly up there on that list.
Yeah, and black holes might actually be more of a terrible secret and numerous secret than we originally thought. There's been a school of thought that since the universe formed, there were likely a lot of these black holes that were created and then just kind of hung around. They weren't close enough to anything to really show up or be reactive, and they've been around for so long that they have burned off a lot of their size and their radiation output is very low, so it's difficult to see them at all.
Like celestial squatters.
Basically. And some estimates put this count of black holes at something like 300 per cubic light year, which is a lot.
That is pretty a lot for space being pretty empty. That's a lot of black holes, and not, you know, going from like, well, we think they're mostly in the center of galaxies, so oh, there's one about 300 every square or cubic light year.
So it's not something that we really have to worry about all that much, at least, you know, at our present time. If it was something to worry about, we'd already be dead by now. But it might explain what scientists have been searching for in terms of dark matter, where we know for a fact that our galaxy, anyway, is much more dense than it should be from the stuff that we can see, because we can make a reasonable guess at how many stars and bodies orbiting those stars there are in our known part of the galaxy and calculate the mass from that. And based off of our interactions with other galaxies and other factors, we know how much our mass should be. And that number is much higher than how much we can actually see. So we think that it's something known as dark matter that is mass that we can't observe. And this high concentration of black holes would semi-fit that bill. There's some problems, of course, with how many black holes and how massive each one is, and how, because, you know, we can't really directly measure that if they're not interacting with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're even existing in that quantity is just a theory at the moment in any sense. But that could explain why our universe is so damn fat.
Dang that universe. Needs to go on a diet.
Yeah, get some exercise.
Black hole diet. It's a new fad.
Does the Milky Way even lift?
The Milky Way is named after a candy bar.
Yeah.
Or was it the other way around?
Seriously. Yeah. Somebody looked at a candy bar and was looking up at the night sky and said, you know what? That looks about right. I like that.
The Milky Way is lactose intolerant, just FYI. It's a little sad.
Yep. So that, in a nutshell, is the whole story about black holes.
Oh!
Oh. Yep. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's about all that we have time for tonight. So until next time, I am the Pusher Robot.
And I'm the Shover Robot.
And you have gone down the stairs. As you know, I'm all about that space, travel. I'm all about that space, travel. I'm all about that space, travel. I'm all about that space.